And now it's 10 a.m.
Let's just get down to it.
And it's time for your sports fix.
Strap yourselves in, folks.
From two guys who have covered the teams you're passionate about for years.
We are professionals.
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Ben Anderson, Jake Hatch filling in for Jake Scott. What's going on, Jake?
Not too much. I always like filling in because it's just easy. It's still Jake and Ben.
Still Jake and Ben.
So this is the thing.
Jake Scott is a little family vacay, celebrating the Easter holiday. Our kids are on spring break.
Spring breaking it a little bit, yeah.
So enjoying. He's enjoying a little family time, so he'll be back with us tomorrow. But I always appreciate you filling in. Big show today coming up at 11 o'clock. We're going to talk to Tim Lacombe, give us a breakdown on the latest with the Utah Jazz, plus what we saw from the NCAA tournament over the weekend. NC State still dancing. Yeah. One of the best stories I've seen in my lifetime. As far as, you know, we've seen some of these VCUs and smaller teams make these
UCLA
runs.
UCLA made a run like this not too long ago, but yeah. Considering
NC State had to win five straight games in the ACC tournament, notoriously one of the toughest, if not the toughest, college basketball tournament or conference tournament up there with the Big 12, to make it and now to just keep dancing and just plowing through everybody and playing as well as they have has been very fun to watch.
I don't know if I mentioned this to you. I think I did when I was filling in for Sarah not too long ago. NC State, to win the ACC, they're one of six teams in the conference who have a national title in their history. The other five teams they had to play to get into the tournament all had national titles on their resume as well. So they didn't run through the dregs of the ACC. They had to go through the top dogs.
Yeah, it wasn't like Duke and North Carolina all got eliminated on the first day and they got to avoid them. No, they just beat everybody.
And they've carried it forward. DJ Burns, by the way, if you have not watched this kid play, he is worth the price of admission. Nikola Jokic last night apparently was late to getting to his media session because he's watching him do his thing. So it's been a really fun run for them. And the whole thing about Alabama football school making their first Final Four, well, hey, things happen when you invest money in those programs.
Been fun games. Been fun games overall. Purdue got the win as well. UConn is crushing everybody and still looks like the overwhelming favorite to win. But the Final Four is set up, so excited to see how it looks in quality teams. I don't think many people had NC State getting this far.
No, they didn't. And that's the fun part about it. And that's the glory and kind of the majesty of what this tournament entails, Ben, is you have teams that come out of seemingly nowhere like an NC State. This is a program, the last time they were in the Final Four, they won the whole dang thing. That's the whole Jim Valvano, 1983, running around the court in the pit down there in New Mexico without somebody to hug, trying to figure out what he was doing. But that is where I think we all get sucked into this tournament, and the fact that there's talk of the SEC wanting to change who gets in and the like, just leave it how it is.
Yeah, just leave it up.
Just stop.
It's fine. Alabama, low-key having a very, was it 1998, University of Utah run, where Brandon Miller gets drafted number two overall last year. Mm-hmm. So their best basketball prospect they've had in a very long time. And they're a good school, you know.
Yeah.
Jazz have two players in their backcourt from Alabama. There are plenty of Alabama NBA players. But Brandon Miller's the best of the bunch. He leaves, number two overall pick, just like Keith Van Horn. And now they go on a Final Four run. And they weren't able to do that last year. In fact, I don't think they'd ever... I think they'd only won one Sweet 16.
I think so, yeah.
Historically?
This is Alabama does not have a strong basketball tradition. Nate Oates, their head coach, they just locked him up. They're going to pay him a bunch of money going forward.
Save so much with Saban. They don't have to pay anymore.
And there was the running joke online all weekend long. Hey, now that Saban retired, they finally got out of the way of the basketball program. Yeah. So it's fun to see what they're doing. And yeah, it shows that traditional powerhouses in some sports, while their tradition may not exist in other sports, you can change that. Nate Oates, he's going to be one of the highest paid coaches moving forward, and the Alabama administration thinking right now, the fact that they've already locked up that contract extension, like, yeah, good thing we did it right now.
And the nice thing, and I don't want to say Alabama doesn't have notable players. It does, but not the way you have on these other teams. But, I mean, you talked about DJ Burns, who's become a household name.
Mm-hmm.
Zach Edey is a household name because he is such a unique basketball player.
PK's going to get mad if I don't say Zach Bake Edey. Baked Edey.
Baked
Edey. That's what he's been going with for the last week or so.
Because he's 7'4", he's so dominant. Big. He's truly dominant. And then Donovan Klingon for UConn is equally dominant as a big man and was great in their last game. So, personally, I am rooting for UConn to beat Alabama and Purdue to beat the NC State, and I know those are the two number one seeds. That's not as fun, but I want to see Donovan Klingon going up against Zach Edey in the championship game, the two biggest and probably the two best players right now still alive in college basketball.
Well, the thing about it is it's been kind of set up for this also. There have been two of, if not the two best teams in the entire game all season long. So yeah, it's set up with the bracket, with them on opposite sides. I'm with you. I want to see those two squaring off because it feels like, and Klingon's getting a lot more of the love with the NBA side of things.
Yeah.
I'm coming around a little more. I'll get your thought on this, Ben. Is Zach Edey changing your mind about his prospects as a pro based on how he's playing in this postseason? Because I remember last year watching him and I was like, okay, yeah, he is a stiff. He is going to be a second round pick and we'll see what happens. But it feels like he's transformed a little bit in my mind. What do you think?
I would be stunned if he's not a first rounder.
Okay.
And I think I've said, I could see him having a decade long career. Now, he's a specialist. The same way we got to kind of change our opinions. Like Sam Merrill's a specialist in the NBA,
oh, yeah,
right?
Absolutely,
he comes
yeah.
in, plays 10 minutes a game. He's stretches the floor, and he's going to knock down a couple of threes. And just as long as he's on the floor, you just kind of have to always be mindful of what he does.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a little bit of how we need to view a player like Zach Edey, which is he's a specialist. He is so enormous. He is so big. You have to change what you do when he is on the floor. Now, both teams do. The offense does, and the defense does, because he's not very quick. So you're going to have to, if other teams go small, you're going to have to punish them on the other side by giving him the ball and letting him score every time. Otherwise, there's going to be some really ugly stretches in the NBA with Zach Edey on the floor when you can play a true five out. And they're going to beat him either off the dribble, from the perimeter, or they're just going to stand outside and shoot threes. But, man, I mean, you just can't argue with what he's done. In the last four games just in the tournament, he has a 30-point game, a 40-point game, a 27-point game, and a 23-point game. He's also grabbed 21 rebounds, 14 rebounds, 14 rebounds, and 16 rebounds. He's awesome. He is dominating the way he's supposed to. And then what I like about him, and I think this is a huge plus, which you don't see every night, he really cares. Like his care factor is through the roof. And if you're 7 feet tall and you like sports, he's a multi-sport athlete, mm-hmm. grew up playing hockey and baseball and had to switch over to basketball because
the idea of him playing hockey, man.
Yeah, you don't see a lot of 7'4" hockey players.
Yeah.
He's an athlete. Mm-hmm. So I like that about him. And then he likes sports, which is a really huge plus. And he's a pro. I mean, he's worked really hard to improve his game. So I imagine, again, he's going to keep getting better. And when you're that size, you have that touch, and you want to play hard, you want to play, you're going to find a way to make it in the NBA, and teams will find a way to employ him.
Well, and I watched, so I was at the Minnesota Timberwolves Jazz game a couple weeks back, and I had forgotten that Luka Garza was on the Timberwolves mm-hmm. roster. You remember him, when he was in college, he was a back-to-the-basket guy,
yep.
and everybody was like, okay, he's not going to translate to the NBA level. Watching him play for the Minnesota Timberwolves, where he is coming off the bench, and he's a guy who's making threes from the perimeter, he's kind of an energy guy, I was like, okay, well, yeah, he may have been, some thought he was a little bit of a specialist, and he still is to a degree, but he's transformed his game. And that's got to be kind of the same thought here for a guy like Zach Edey. He's going to have to obviously transform in some respects, but you're right. At 7'4", what do they list him at weight-wise?
Oh, he's got to be 305.
He's huge.
Yeah, he's just, something like that.
Huge does not do him justice because you just can't slow him down. So, yes, it is going to transform how opposing teams will go about defending when he's on the court, and that can be an advantage. It may not be where he's playing 30 minutes a night as a starter in the NBA, Ben, but when he's out there, the lineup for a team, guess what? We all talk about versatility in the NBA. The one thing that Zach Edey would offer a team is versatility with a whole different look offensively and defensively.
Right.
That, as you mentioned, it forces the other team to say, crap, we got to completely change the game plan here.
And we're having a little bit of a moment with the super big players coming back into the NBA. You know, and I'm not going to compare him to Wimby or Chet Holmgren because he doesn't play at all similar to those two, as athletic as they are. But we are getting back to the point where the league is getting so big at the skill positions that size is becoming even a bigger premium again in the middle with big 7-footers who protect the rim. And Zach Edey is one of those guys. So Excited to see what he does at the next level, but he's had a very fun tournament. He's been enjoyable to watch, as has Donovan Kling, as we mentioned. And we will see if anybody actually gives UConn a game. I'm not convinced they will. They're up 44-18 at halftime, it feels like, every game.
Did you see that 30-0 run that they put on?
Crazy.
That doesn't happen, and they just made it look routine. That was the incredible part about that, is like, holy smokes, that's 30-0, and you're like, that just doesn't happen in basketball.
I've never heard of that happening, other than these games when it's, you know, Kentucky is playing the season opener against Westminster.
Little Sisters of the Poor.
Well, yeah, they ended up winning the game 98-40.
Yeah.
It's like, you just don't see 30-point runs, especially at this level.
This is the Elite Eight. Like, come on. It's been an incredible basketball tournament overall. But, yeah, I'm with you. And here's the thing. I picked UConn ahead of the tournament. Mm-hmm. I went with the chalkiest of the chalk picks you could go with. But I just looked at them. I'm like, you know what? They've got the feel of one of those teams that absolutely can repeat. It doesn't happen a lot in college basketball, but what they've done there at UConn is they've kept the guys together. They upgraded a couple of pieces around their star players, Donovan Kling, and I think chief among them, and they've benefited. And they're running roughshod right now, and it just feels like that they're on their way to a back-to-back title.
And Dan Hurley seems right now head and shoulders better than every other basketball coach. And now maybe that's just the talent he has.
He's pretty good.
Hey, he's gotten the talent. He's cultivated it. And then, like you said, he convinced Donovan Kling to come back. And they lost Jordan Hawkins, who was a lottery pick and was probably their best player last year, at least their kind of go-to scoring option. I know Klingon had a big tournament, but to lose a lottery pick and then come back and be this good, that's a sign of a good coach, and Dan Hurley is there.
Well, and he's got some chutzpah, I guess would probably the best way to say it, and he backs it up. That's the fun part about this. That the Hurley family, we've all seen Bobby, obviously, at Arizona State, got all kinds of attitude and energy. But that is the thing about how this goes, is you look at what is going on with the college basketball universe. NIL, transfer portal, it's completely changed how things operate. I think we've seen that locally with our local teams, BYU, Utah State. But Dan Hurley, as you mentioned, he's kind of stands alone right now. He convinced Donovan Kling, hey, come back for another year, develop your game a little bit further, and you may find yourself even higher up in with regards to the NBA draft. And him convincing Donovan to do that has proven to be prophetic, and he's done what he promised him he would do. That's going to benefit UConn. This is a program. Remember, Jim Calhoun was running things for a long time there, and it seemed like routinely it was not necessarily a flashy style of basketball for UConn under Jim Calhoun.
Sure.
Highly, highly effective, yielded multiple national titles. Kevin Ollie got a title, and then things went by the wayside, and they had to kind of rebuild things, and Dan Hurley came in and got back to kind of the formula for success in stores, and man, are they looking special right now.
We'll see how long they can keep it up. I'm curious how college basketball transforms with the transfer portal, and if you can build these types of dynasty programs where, you know, you don't have guys sticking around for 3 or 4 years. They're either one-and-done kids, or you're bringing in transfers from other schools. And, you know, it's crazy where these kids are coming from. I mean, they're coming from all over to jump in and join these schools where in the past, like, I remember Rodney Hood transferred to Duke from Mississippi State. And it was well, that's pretty weird. Like, Duke doesn't need to take a lot of transfers. This is not what Duke
and
has to do.
They don't.
But going forward, all these teams are going to have to refill spots, especially if you lose, you know, somebody like a Jordan Hawkins, we mentioned, maybe you can go out and find a gunner to step in and take that role.
Did you see the quote from Dan Hurley over the weekend?
I didn't.
Quote, our fan base is obnoxious as bleep on social, so everyone hates us.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, tell us how it really is, Coach, but he's not wrong. Like, UConn fans, trust me, they're reveling in it right now, but that's the fun part about this is you love coaches who have some personality. We know the Hurley family, they're not short on opinions and that energy, and they're just the overall nature that they are. But it's going to be interesting, you're right, to see if you can build, because this is going to create a dynasty for UConn. Can Dan Hurley continue to kind of replace that and restock that talent? And it feels like to me, Ben, UConn's going to be a place that he absolutely is going to have to rely on transfers in this transfer portal era. I still feel like there are some programs, I'm thinking of the Kentuckys, the Kansases, the Dukes, that they can go out and bring in the McDonald's All-Americans and enough talent via the high school ranks where they probably don't have to rely on it nearly as much. And UConn feels like they're going to be a team like that that's going to have to kind of do opposite, where they're going to be like, okay, there's really good player at this university. Let's bring him in and add him to our core. And that's not a bad way to go about it, because guess what? It's what the future and the reality is of this sport. Mark Pope down at BYU, I can speak to this directly, has talked time and time again about how the transfer portal, and he uses the term integral to how BYU is going to go about building their roster. I would say that Craig Smith's thinking the same thing. We just saw what Danny Sprinkle did in one season with Utah State before he exited for Washington. And now it's up to Jared Calhoun to come in and carry on a pretty strong run there for Utah State. So it's not a perfect world. I know that drives fans insane because they have so many guys that seem to go in and out of their roster every year, and you're trying to get to know these guys, and it's hard to do that when it's as transactional as it's become. But guess what? That's what it is going to be. So embrace it and hope that your coaching staff and also your NIL fund has enough there in the pot.
Yeah, I'll be curious how it works. I just, you know, there's a couple of these kind of blue blood. I mean, they're blue blood teams that have survived. They are not getting there with a bunch of freshmen.
Yeah.
Like, UNC was really old this year. Duke even had, you know, Kyle Filipowski, who could have gone to the draft last year, probably would have been a pick in the 20s, but comes back for his second season, mm-hmm. and it's probably going to be a lottery pick now this year. So UConn's older. Like, they've got sophomores on the road. They're not old. Stephen Castle's still a younger player. Steph Castle's a younger player.
Sure.
But Klingon's in his second year. Like, he's got a lot more experience. And then you see some of these teams that didn't last very long. Now, then again, you know, Kansas went out and got Hunter Dickinson, who I thought was going to be a much better and bigger impact player for them, and got bounced pretty early in the tournament.
The thing about it is the whole old adage, get old, stay old. I know that it's still very much something that people want to do. I think it's more about experience, Ben. You talk about the fact that you have a Donovan Klingon who's got a second year in a program. You know what? That's enough experience at that point. With as many games as college basketball players play, they get that experience pretty quickly, and they do a lot of off-season work and the like. So it'll be interesting, but you're right. The era of John Calipari putting five freshmen together, the Fab Five, like, I'm not sure those are going to break through very often. It's going to be more experienced teams. But even, as you mentioned, with UConn, where it's a bunch of sophomores, well, guess what? That's a second year in a program. That's enough experience at that point to make your run.
And we may get the occasional super freshman that comes through. You know, had Victor Wembanyama played in college basketball last year, I suspect whichever team he played for would have been dominant. Then again, Chet Holmgren's very good and didn't do a whole lot that was all that noteworthy as a player at Gonzaga, even before becoming the number two overall pick. All right, let's take a quick break. We're going to have Tim Lacombe join us coming up at 11 o'clock. Top three stories at KSLSports.com. Coming up next, stick around. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
It's time to break down the biggest stories of the day.
Let's go.
This is the top three stories of the day on KSLSports.com. On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Top three stories. Quickly, nominate your youth sports volunteer that you know for the Hercules Hero of the Week. Submit your nomination at kslsports.com/contest and listen every Thursday afternoon to JJ and Alex for the winner. Help us celebrate the efforts of those volunteers making an impact with the Hercules Hero of the Week, sponsored by Hercules Credit Union. All right, Sarah, what's first?
Number one, Jazz GM Justin Zanuck is to undergo a kidney transplant.
Yeah, the story came out this morning. Jay-Z going to be getting a kidney transplant tomorrow. Obviously, first and foremost, extending our best to him and his family. I quite enjoy Justin Zanuck. Enjoyed getting to know him. He's one of the weird, like, faces of the Jazz that have been here for a long time. I mean, he got here in 2012. And
I think, what, 1 or 2 year hiatus?
A couple of years in Milwaukee.
In Milwaukee, then came right back.
But it's 2024. I mean, he's been here for more than a decade now, been certainly around the Utah Jazz, and has had a really big impact on the team. So hoping for the best for his health, talking to Justin. It sounds like early in October, just before his 49th birthday, you know, they'd been traveling all over the world, scouting, and going to Australia, and going to all these different basketball tournaments, and having a draft. And he came back, and his wife had said, "Hey, you just seem tired."
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Well, yeah, I'm traveling. I'm circumnavigating.
I've got across the Pacific Ocean twice in a month.
I am tired." And she said, "Yeah, go get a physical." And, you know, now he recognized this could be an issue. His father has this, has kidney issues. It's called PKD.
Yeah, polycystic kidney disease.
So he recognized that this could be something in his future, but said he felt fine. Said he felt mostly like nothing was all that wrong other than, yeah, I'm tired because I have an intense job that requires me to work 70 hours a week or more. I'm sure he'd scoff at 70 hours a week. So he goes and he gets a physical and everything comes back normal except for his kidneys, which, you know, Jake, you and me, healthy kidneys probably functioning at 90%.
Yeah, you hope.
His were at 14%.
Well, and that's the thing about this. What I've learned about kidney disease, I've got a friend who's dealt with stuff. It's not the same thing, but here's the thing. Kidney disease, it's a silent thing. You don't realize it because 8 years between a physical and Kate, that's one thing. Like his wife convinced him. He probably had, he's like, I was feeling fine. Like I said, I was a little bit tired.
Right.
But you don't anticipate, you know what I'm going to have? I'm going to have my kidneys in failure. Yeah, right. Like that. So best wishes to Justin. He's part of that trend of guys who were an agent that have made the transition into NBA front offices, but he has made an incredible adjustment in that. And I also really liked in the, this goes to, the, I think, ESPN story. I was reading, like, I read yours, I read the ESPN, I read the one from the Jazz. And in it, there was one point pointed out that he has been more than willing as a GM, because GMs have a lot of power. Mm-hmm. We all know this. They're negotiating these deals. But he has been very happy to let Ryan Smith as the owner, Danny Ainge as the CEO, and Will Hardy as the head coach to kind of be, as they said, the touchstones of this franchise, where he kind of operates in the background. And that can take a lot for certain people to do it. But Jay-Z, as PK likes to call him all the time, he has done a very good job about just being, you know what, you guys be out there in front. I'm going to be back here doing my thing.
Yeah, I will tell you, all of these trades, all of this stuff, the architect is Justin Zanuck.
He's very
good.
He's
making the phone calls. Yeah. He's the one who's getting all these things to the finish line. Mm-hmm. And then Danny Ainge, Ryan Smith, the rest of the brain trust comes in and says, hey, like, yes, this is the best option. This is what we like. Mm-hmm. But Justin Zanuck has been integral in what the Utah Jazz have been doing. So extending our best to him, his family. He's got some kids, too. So sending our best to Justin Zanuck, having the surgery tomorrow. Says he expects to be back before the draft. So a couple of weeks laid up. He's got to make sure that everything works out. And it's pretty amazing. One of the things we learned about was the National Kidney Registry, which allows you to get on a donor list. But instead of me just being like, oh, well, I have to ask my friends and family if I have an identical match randomly that can do it. As long as somebody is willing to donate in my name, I'm on this registry and I can get it from anyone in the country who's in a similar situation where they need somebody who they know somebody who needs a kidney.
Good Samaritans.
And they might not be the good match, the perfect match. But yes, they're a good Samaritan. So it goes from, oh, well, I've got a social circle of 20 people to, oh, well, I've got a national registry with tens of thousands of people on it. Mm-hmm. The odds of me finding a match now increase dramatically. And that's the case with Justin. So excited for him that he got the he's getting the transplant and that worked out before he had to go on dialysis or anything. And then we'll keep him up to date.
Yeah, and the thing about this is he is going to continue to be a big part of what they're doing in this franchise. Don't think that this is going to cause him to take much of a step back. He'll be in the hospital to make sure that the transplant takes and all that stuff, but knowing how Justin has operated during his time, he'll be back at it pretty quickly and he'll be going as hard, if not harder than ever.
And look, the Jazz are 2 weeks away from doing pre-draft workouts.
Yep. So
if they haven't started already, it's going to happen.
The scouting's been underway for quite a while, but the actual having guys show up in Salt Lake City is going to be starting very, very quickly.
All right, Sarah, number two.
Number two, BYU wraps up spring football.
A very quiet spring football, which, again, at this point is probably good. Now, it was muddied a little bit or quieted, suppressed a little bit just because BYU was in the NCAA tournament, and that was exciting. So
it covered a lot of it,
That's where our focus was, which has not been the case a lot over the last decade, unfortunately, with our local college football teams and college basketball teams. But also it means that there was no significant injuries. Like, you didn't lose your potential starting quarterback or a potential starting running back to a knee or a broken arm or something. Certainly nothing that's going to last into the summer and then maybe to the beginning of the season. So obviously the big question is, what's BYU going to do at quarterback? I thought it was interesting to hear A-Rod say they're not going to go out and get another transfer quarterback. This is the group that they're running with. And am I wrong? It sounds like Retzlaff was the guy.
I would say the leader in the clubhouse is Jake Retzlaff. I think he will be the guy barring something unforeseen. You're right. It was... A-Rod was emphatic. He was, Mitch asked him. I was Mitch was right off my left shoulder and said, hey, are you going to look at the transfer for another quarterback? And A-Rod said no. And they had made similar comments in the lead-up to spring ball that they were not anticipating that. But I had the same question. If Mitch wasn't going to ask it, I was going to ask the question because you want to kind of get a feel for, okay, 15 practices later, a month after this, do you feel like you have the horses you need? And then at the quarterback position, it's an outsized role in terms of the success of a football program. And he was emphatic saying, no, we're not going to do it. So that screams to me that, yes, they are content with, looks like Jake Retzlaff and or Gary Bohannon being the guy. Gary Bohannon is getting closer to having his full arm strength. He said it's been a process. We talked with him as part of the spring wrap-up, and he said that it's been a long, arduous process. He spent 6 months, Ben, by the way, not being able to throw a football. He said six months without any, and he came back, started throwing tennis balls, and then upgrading to a youth football. Uh-huh. And it's really, he said it's taken him almost a full year to kind of get back to where he feels like he's at. I don't think it's fully back yet, so that leads me to think, based on what I saw slash A-Rod saying, that Jake Retzlaff, who threw no interceptions through 15 practices, yeah, I think it's Jake's job to lose.
I am not going to hold BYU to no transfer quarterbacks. If the right name presents itself, go out and get him. But, so you don't have to stick to this.
Sure.
If you can improve, I tell you the best advice I ever got. I was in line at a car parts place, and a guy behind me asked me if my car was for sale. Mm-hmm. And I said no. And then after I got my little car part or whatever it was, another guy in line came up to me and said, hey, buddy, your car is always for sale.
It's always for sale, yeah.
I was like, oh, you're not just talking about my car. You're talking about everything. Like, you can always improve. You can always look to improve things, and you should never say no. I didn't even know what the guy was going to offer me for my car.
Sure.
I just said no.
Yeah.
Mistake. So I learned something from this random person at the auto parts store. But to that point for BYU, look, if the right QB comes along and says, hey, man, A-Rod did a lot for two quarterbacks who are now in the NFL, I want to have that same opportunity. Yeah, your car is for sale.
Well, and here's the thing. Let's use the example, Jackson Dart. Now, Jackson was a star here in the prep ranks. And let's say a guy of his caliber. We're talking he's an all-SEC caliber quarterback who's going to have an NFL future. If that type of quarterback came onto the market in the spring portal period, which, by the way, if I'm not mistaken, the portal opens up on the 15th, so about 2 weeks away from that opening up. If one of those guys came on the market and for whatever reason they had interest in BYU, I use Jackson Dart because he had the connection to BYU before ultimately going to USC and now Ole Miss. If that caliber quarterback came on the market and said, hey, I am interested in going to BYU and playing football, you can guarantee that Kalani Sitake, A-Rod, anybody in that program is like, yes, come on over, let's chat. Because you're right. That you have a price, I guess is the best way to say it. But if you find the right guy, absolutely, you'd open it up and say, yeah, we'll take you.
So good for BYU. Nice to get through spring football unscathed.
On the injury front, by the way, they've had a number of injuries, but no season ending. They had a very physical camp. Trust me, I saw a lot of guys in slings with braces, boots, that type of stuff all throughout spring, and a number of guys that have notable names. But the good news is it sounds like there are no season-ending injuries. So that is the positive. They kind of ran the gauntlet of playing physical football, getting guys ready for the Big 12, while at the same time avoiding long-term, really impactful type injury.
All right, Sarah, number three.
Number three, Utah State hires Jared Calhoun as a men's basketball coach.
Yep, coming over. They announced this over the weekend. What did it end up being, about a week vacancy?
Roughly, yeah. They made moves very quickly to make sure it was shored up really, really quick.
Another younger coach.
Yeah.
42 for Jared Calhoun, so they didn't go the older route with the idea that someone will stick around. Now, that doesn't mean Jared Calhoun can't stick around, but I guess you do put yourself in a spot where if he wins a lot, he's going to get another big job offer, but has led Youngstown State to back-to-back 20-win seasons. He's got 7 20-win campaigns overall in his career. Good for Utah State. I suspect, I can't guarantee this, we will hear him on this station in the not-too-distant future.
So, as I understand, I believe they're supposed to have an introductory press conference, I think, tomorrow or Wednesday.
Okay.
So, I would anticipate Hans and Scott will be up there at that, because Scott being the play-by-play voice, I want him involved. So, here's the thing. This is an interesting pick because this goes back to more of Diana Sabo's roots out there in the Midwest. This is a guy who's a native of Ohio, Youngstown State, based in Ohio. Goes from, you mentioned, those two back-to-back 21 seasons with the Penguins. That's a pretty good mark. And also the conference mark, 29-11. So this seems like more of kind of the trend we've seen with Utah State in the recent past. Think about what they did. Craig Smith, younger coach, good run, gets the job at Utah. You bring Ryan Odom in. Ryan wasn't necessarily as adept at wanting to stay in Logan and out west, so he went back to VCU on the East Coast. Now we see Danny Sprinkle, one season off to Washington. Well, Jared Calhoun's going to be thinking like, hey, I'm going to make it 4-for-4 here. I'm going to use this. I'm going to springboard myself up to – is it now the Power 5 level with the Pac-12 going away, Ben? So
yeah.
In basketball, it's in the Power 6. Yeah. So he's got to be thinking, like, hey, 1, 2, 3 years here, and if everything goes according to plan, I could find myself making a bunch of money at a big program. And the nice part is it looks like, I just saw this come across, that Isaac Johnson, who's their star five-man, the mm-hmm. prep star from American Fork, posted, we're not done yet. So it means at least, as they call him, Fish might be sticking around.
Big Fish?
Yep.
Sticking around? Good for him.
So that's one piece, at least, for Calhoun, like to think, okay, I have my stretch five, at least, on the roster for me.
Yeah, Youngstown State, by the way, was in the NIT tournament. They were second in the Horizon League this year, behind Oakland, who had the big run in the NCAA tournament.
Golkey.
Yeah, with Golkey.
What's his first name? It starts with a J.
Everyone just needs Golkey.
Yeah,
Jared?
Yeah. Jared, yeah, I think you're right.
I can't remember. But yeah, Golkey, the sharpshooter from Oakland.
The three-point specialist.
Way, not Oakland, California.
No.
Oakland, Michigan.
Yeah, their coach has been on the sideline of that program for 40-some-odd years, and yeah, they... Yeah, but anyways, this will be a fun thing to have. The report said that Calhoun's going to have more NIL resources and the backing of the athletic department than anybody else. That was a bit of a bone of contention, it sounded like, for a guy like Danny Sprinkle. He felt like he was promised one thing and got less than he anticipated. But, hey, Danny Sprinkle in one season, what a job he did, and he's cashing in by going to Washington, and now Jared Calhoun gets to kind of pick up the reins and see what he can do.
So congratulations to Utah State and Jared Calhoun. Look forward to getting to know him better and see what type of program he runs up in Logan. All right, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we can get into some Jazz basketball. They played better last night, some promise from the rookies as well. Tim Lacombe will join us coming up at 11 o'clock. Stick around. More Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. 50 segment brought to you by Peach Doors and Windows. Utah's premier window and door retailer, combining beauty and technology on windows and doors since 1993. Give them a call today for your free in-home estimate, 801-566-1255. That's 801-566-1255. Also want to remind you, it is Monday. Sarah usually doesn't know how days work, but I want to remind you about Win Ticket Wednesday. Don't miss your chance to win tickets every week on the KSL Sports Zone this week on Win Ticket Wednesday. Win a pair of tickets to see Tim McGraw coming up at the Delta Center April 5th, so soon. KSL right. Sports Zone all day on Wednesday for your chance to win.
All right, Ben. There's not many things worse I would imagine on a flight than what I'm just reading happened to a United Airlines flight.
Okay.
En route from San Francisco to Frankfurt, Germany, was forced to divert due to an overflow from one of the aircraft's toilets into the passenger compartment.
Boo.
I don't want to talk Jazz,
boo.
But...
Boo!
Come on now.
First of all, I think planes always have issues, right? Like, I know Boeings are apparently falling apart at the seams and all these issues. I do think we get to a place where we're like, we're recognizing now, like, okay, so there was the tragedy in Baltimore about the bridge, right?
Yeah.
You're going to get a bunch of bridge stories. Like, it doesn't matter the size of the bridge. Like, it could be a little footbridge. If anything happens to it, people are going to be like, our bridge is on the collapse.
Infrastructure
worldwide.
Is falling apart. Yeah.
So I think we are getting a lot more plane stories than usual because of all the issues at Boeing, but it's not reassuring. Yeah. It doesn't make me feel better.
I don't want to, and here's the thing, San Francisco to Frankfurt, that's a long-haul flight.
Yeah, where were you over the ocean?
The story is paywalled, so I can't see, the idea that I'm like, oh, that's rough.
I mean, hopefully they were still over the mainland U.S., I would imagine.
Oh, yeah.
Otherwise, you just say, you know, did they take a vote, like a head count of being like, do we just want to finish? Do we just want to go?
How close are we?
Everyone just plug your nose, and we'll just get it done. We'll light some candles in the cockpit and just move on.
Light some incense and call it a day. Let's go.
Horrendous.
Yeah. Anyways, let's talk Jazz.
Similarly, the Utah Jazz have lost 9 in a row. Longest losing streak for the Jazz since 2014. It's now tied for the 5th longest losing streak in franchise history. Technically 4th, but they've had 2 11-game losing streaks also. So 4 other losing streaks longer. And after last night's loss, Jake, the Jazz are guaranteed to have a 3rd consecutive season with a worse winning percentage than the previous year.
Okay.
It's technically the 5th time it's happened, but the last 4 times it happened in a 5-year span, so they happened back to back to back. So that happened.
Got it, okay.
1998, the Jazz make the finals. 99, they're worse than 98. 2000, they're worse than 99. 01, they're worse than 2000. 2002, they're worse than 2001. Mm-hmm. So it was really kind of one natural decline, and it coincided with, I don't want to say a fun era of Jazz basketball, but a romantic era of Hornacek retires, John and Carl are aging. Like, it was the final years of Kobe. It was the final years of Dirk Nowitzki. It's just like, you accept that this is going to come to an end, and the teams are going to slowly get worse, but you're still enjoying and savoring the two greatest players in franchise history. So it wasn't quite as shocking as, oh, you have the best record in the NBA at 50-22 in the 2020-2021 season, and then over the next 3 years you get progressively worse to the point where you're having the worst season in a decade and might end up with their fewest wins in a very long time. They are not playing well.
Trust me, you and I, we're on social media. We see the outrage that is coming from Jazz fans, but I think that the trend downwards, you're right. They went from having the best record in the NBA, they get bounced in that playoff series, and who would have thought, as you mentioned, 3-4 years later that they are like as down as they are? And there are Jazz fans out there on both sides of this. Why are they tearing this down to build it back up? Or they should have tanked outright last year. You see what Victor Wembanyama is doing for San Antonio. They can't even tank right. It's okay. Here's the deal. The Jazz are trying to execute a plan that they, I think, have thought long and hard about. We talked about Justin Zanuck a little earlier on in today's show, and obviously best wishes to him as he deals with his kidney transplant here. But Danny Ainge, Ryan Smith, Justin Zanuck, and every other decision maker that's on the board, I guess we can call it, sitting around that round table. Will Hardy's included in that, I'm sure, to a level. They're all on the same page. They know what they're trying to execute here. Is it ultimately going to work out? Well, that's years down the line, looks like, in terms of the final outcome of this. But I think that I don't want to use the trust the process because that's Philadelphia. They co-opted that phrase. But I just...
And didn't do it particularly well.
No, they did not at all. They had one plan and it went completely haywire and ended up yielding themselves a generational superstar in Joel Embiid at the end of it. But nonetheless, you look at it and it's frustrating to watch how they're playing right now because, in all honesty, I think every Jazz fan within the sound of our voice is looking at this team right now, Ben, saying, we've got to play, what, we got 7 or 8 games left?
7 games left.
Yeah. We got to play 7 more games?
Yeah.
We got to endure 7 more of this? Could this be a 16-game losing streak potentially if they lost out? It's not ideal in that respect because it leaves a bad taste in everybody's mouth. But the reality is the Jazz are trying to execute something here, and for the second straight year, they actually were better than I think they anticipated roster-wise. You and I have talked about this on the show previously when I filled in. Is they thought they were weaker roster-wise going into a season the last 2 years and had to make moves at the trade deadline to essentially knock them down to where they're like, hey, we can accumulate assets and we can continue to execute this rebuild without having it be interrupted by a team that overachieves.
They do not believe that they even have the ability to bottom out. So I know a lot of fans are like, well, why didn't you tank harder for Victor Wembanyama? I do think that was the plan. And then it just so happened that Lowry was too good and you still had Mike Conley around. And I think Mike Conley was there just to kind of be a vet. And all of a sudden he and Lowry were winning games at a 500 rate. Yeah. And it was like, okay, well, that's not exactly the design, but Lowry's really good. So I guess we got to figure out what we have here. And then this year was very similar. How good could Lowry be without Mike Conley? And they took that learning experience and decided, still need to add more lottery talent. Mm-hmm. And so they pulled the plug at the trade deadline, added the more picks that we know about and have talked about quite a bit. But this is not a team that is going to continue to get worse. I don't see the Jazz, and I've been told this is not the plan, bottoming out. They are not going to try and hit rock bottom next year with Cooper Flagg or the year after with the Boozer Twins coming in. the Jazz want to build around right now and then set themselves up to improve by developing these young players and then when these trades become available. And I asked Justin Zanuck at one point, what is the plan? Because that's been a narrative. There's no plan. A lot of people think that. I said, what's the plan? He said, the plan's to get better. Like, simply put, the plan is to get better. So I would expect the Jazz to try to add this offseason.
Do you think that is, I don't know, is it the go all in on this draft, try and find some pieces, or are we talking executing, using some of these draft picks and those assets to accumulate some talent via trade?
I kind of feel like they're going to add at least one more young player.
Okay.
And I think maybe you do that with your top 10 pick. And then if you package these two and move out of the draft, either for a player or just to kick the can down the road so you get another draft pick. Like, maybe you trade the 31st pick and this year's 28th pick for another team's top 15 protected pick a year from now.
Okay.
And then the Jazz say, well, yeah, we don't own our own pick next year. It's going to go to Oklahoma City. But we have another pick that's only top 15 protected on top of the Minnesota pick, on top of the Cleveland Cavaliers pick. And then you have three picks again next year. It just continues to have a lot of wiggle room and a lot of I could see them doing something like that because, man, and we'll talk to Tim Lacombe about the three rookies who we saw last night and all played pretty well. You can't add three more rookies to there's just not room.
No.
There's not room to add three more rookies. There was barely room to add these guys, which is why two of them, including the number 9 overall pick, have only played the second half of the season. Mm-hmm. So I think they want to get better. I think you're going to see, if the opportunity presents itself, some trades to try and make the roster better.
Well, and that's – I think that would – engender some confidence that yes, there is a plan, because you're right, the nerve out there, they're flying by the seat of their pants. It's like, oh, okay,
nobody does that at a $1 billion business. No, nobody does that.
They don't. But you're right, the nice part is they have the versatility. If they want to go all in this offseason, they can do that. If they want to go all in next year, they have that versatility in terms of the assets they've accumulated to when they want to push the chips into the middle of the table, and they don't have to push all of them in because, trust me, they've got enough chips to really...
It would be hard to push them all in one offseason.
Yeah, but
it's a lot of money.
But you can cash in a significant portion if you feel like, hey, it's there. Go get it. And that's what they've kind of built up. They call it the war chest that they've built up. They have it, and when they want to utilize it, that's the big question, it feels like.
3-20 since the trade deadline.
Okay.
So a rough stretch, as rough as any in a very long time.
Yeah.
And will probably surpass the worst stretch of the...
How many wins do you think down the stretch here?
Oh, I think they're going to lose out.
That's what I'm kind of feeling, too. I think maybe one... there's like one night, maybe the other team has an off night, and the Jazz spring one on somebody. But honestly, the caliber of opponent as well,
they're all very good.
It's like, whew, yeah, it could be a 16-game losing streak.
All right, Tim Lacombe joins us next. We'll talk Jazz basketball. We'll talk some Final Four as well. Stick around. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Who's got it better than us?
No!
Best sports coverage in Utah. You're listening to Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Happy Monday. Jake Hatch filling in for Jake Scott today. You have better things to do than scramble to find your next great hire. Let Spherion Staffing do it for you. Visit them online, spherion.com/Utah. That's spherion.com/Utah. S-P-H-E-R-I-O-N. Speaking of Spherion, let's welcome in our next guest. We hire him every Monday to come in and correct all of our basketball wrongs. It is Coach Tim Lacombe. What's going on, Coach?
Hey, how are you guys?
We're doing terrific. Hey, last night you got to hang out with our guy JP and actually watch a pretty decent basketball game. I know the Jazz lost by 20, but not unenjoyable until the 21-2 run midway through the third quarter. I actually think the Jazz have played pretty hard their last two outings.
I totally agree. I think Coach Hardy made a nice comment prior to the game, and I think it's something all Jazz fans can take to heart. It's, you know, this is not necessarily all results. In fact, very little of it is the last 8-9 games. It's going to be more about process. It's going to be more about guys being in the right spot. And, you know, we're seeing more of that. I think that the ball moved last night. Jazz shot the ball well from three. And all three rookies, you know, between the three of them, they scored 58 points. So without John Collins, without Larry Markkanen, and Clarkson, obviously this is a young group, and they are going to take their lumps. But there were some good moments last night.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask you about those rookies, Tim. We've been talking about it here on the show today, but really the two in Bryce Sensabaugh and Taylor Hendricks, we're finally getting our first real good extended look at them this season due to some of the injuries and them being more featured in the lineup. Give me your sense for where you see all three of them right now as the regular season is getting closer to an end.
Well, we've seen some great play from all three of them. I think, you know, as a whole, the things that I would say going forward, I think with Keontae, he's had a great opportunity this year, but I think the, you know, going forward for him, it's consistency. You know, he's had a lot of hot and cold moments, and I think, you know, that's indicative of a young player, but moving forward, you'd hope that that's something, you know, he can get a little bit more consistent with his shot, with his decision-making, and just general understanding. I think that'll come in time. We talked a bunch about Hendricks and, you know, the fact that he really is ready-made for the NBA in a lot of different ways. Defensively, his ability to play a lot of different defenses, his ability to switch and guard smaller players. And he's been thrown to the fire. He's had crazy assignments in his rookie year, and it's only going to make him better over time. And I think last night, you know, some things came together for him. But what stands out to me about him, I think, is just more of an offensive game, more of an offensive weapon going forward, you know, working on his handle. He's never going to be a guy that really breaks you down, but just to be able to start playing off of closeouts, using guys' momentum against them. So it's fun to watch him develop, excited about him. And then Sensabaugh, he's a great scorer. And what I've been impressed with is his, you know, throwing himself in on the defensive end, not embarrassed to make some mistakes, which is going to happen, but playing hard. You know, he's got a special chance. I think his ball goes in the hoop. I think he's got a great understanding, far better passer than I thought. And we haven't even gotten to the point, they did it last night, but you can throw that ball to him and he can kind of become somebody you run offense through in the mid post. So a lot of different good things for him. I think continue working on his body and becoming a better educated and, you know, execution wise defender.
Yeah, Will Hardy's talked a lot about putting Larry Markkanen at the nail. That might be a spot you put Bryce Sensabaugh at going forward, just because he's 6'5". I mean, it was funny to see him standing next to Dylan Brooks the other day, Friday night. He's got the exact same body as Dylan Brooks from the Houston Rockets, and Dylan's made a very long career for himself as kind of a tough guy. He's tall enough that I think you put him there. He reads the defense maybe as well as anybody on the Jazz roster right now, and then has the advantage of being a little bit taller. And then he's got some guts to throw some passes, and I think that's part of being a good passer is, like, you know, not every pass Jokic throws is a great idea, but he's got the guts to do it where nobody else does. I feel like Bryce does a little bit of that. I'm not comparing him to Nikola Jokic, but he's willing to try some passes that nobody else does, and if you never try them, they never become a threat.
It's so true. You know, I talked to your buddy Jake Scott ad nauseum about three-point shooting, and, you know, he was always, you know, so consumed with the fact that Ben Simmons doesn't even try to shoot threes. You know, how are you going to get any better? And to your point, I think that that's something you have to do. You have to throw yourself into it. Like this year, the number of times Taylor Hendricks has been, you know, dunked on or guys have flown by him. But, I mean, it's just part of the process. It happens to every rookie that comes into this league. You know, I remind people, I was sitting courtside back in the infamous Kobe Bryant airball game his rookie year. And, you know, I sat there and thought and watched it and was just like, wow, I can't believe that happened. You know, fast forward, obviously, through his career, and nobody's talking about the airball. But rookies, it's a daunting task to get into this league and establish, you know, an identity and something going forward. And these guys are in the midst of that. It's exciting to me.
Now, with Taylor Hendricks, he's obviously going to be called upon to shoot that corner three a lot. And this season's been kind of a mixed bag for him from that spot. It seems like at times that ball comes off his hand in rhythm, and you're like, okay, that's going in. But at other times, it comes off, and you can tell it's flat as can be. You're like, oh, it's going to ricochet off the rim, and there you go. It's a long rebound. Is that just part of the development process for him, is just getting it down to where he knows release point, where he needs to get that out of his hand in terms of making that shot more consistently?
Yeah, it's a good point. I do think his shot is flat. You know, and sometimes when it's flat, obviously in the heat of the moment, you regress to stuff that,
yeah,
you know, you're not thrilled with, but you're working on. And I do think the speed of the game makes shooting more difficult in the NBA, the length of these guys. You know, I think you shoot a couple early on and realize just how fast closes are. And again, I think that that's why, if you are simply just a three-point shooter, you know, teams are going to really know that. And, you know, the idea of running somebody off the line is really to their advantage, because right now Taylor doesn't have a whole lot of, you know, off the bounce game. But as he develops both, as he gets back used to more of the length and speed of the game, and obviously works on some mechanics, get that thing higher. He doesn't miss a lot left or right. You'll notice it's short. So yeah, it's a little bit flat, but I watched the way that, you know, the Jazz worked with guys through the years, and I think he'll find that stroke. What I'm excited about is then when he does, teams start to fly at him. He gives him a shot fake, one or two bounces, and he's playing ball, you know, and I think that that's where he needs to get to.
I want to ask you about John Collins, who in the Jazz's last 16 games, he's appeared 13 times. No, the Jazz aren't winning games at all, but among rotation players, like real rotation players, not Kyra Lewis and some of these guys who are sneaking in for a minute or two, John Collins has the best plus-minus on the team. And again, it's still a negative because the Jazz are losing every game, but he's playing well. And really, since going to Atlanta and he had that terrible game in his homecoming, he's averaging 19 points, 8.5 rebounds. He's shooting the heck out of the ball, 58% from the floor, 52% from three. This is in 13 appearances. It feels like he's figured something out. And I know he's had some hot streaks before, and that's kind of who he is as a player. But whereas I had no idea how he could kind of fit going forward, I kind of get a sense that, hey, this might be a guy that you give another season to see if he really figures out what the Jazz are asking of him and can grow into his role.
He's been great. And I think he and Sexton, to me, in terms of veterans this year, have taken a huge step. You know, don't forget, you know, I answered a million questions last year when Jazz acquired John, and like, do they really want a guy who shoots 29% from three? I mean, you got to look beyond the numbers, and there was a lot more to that. I think he's in heaven here with the way the ball moves. And he's found in that small ball five, you know, where he has an advantage, you know, most nights. He's obviously on the defensive end giving up some things, but his offense, you know, the space that he's got and is able to play with, he's really thrived. So I'm with you. I think he and Sexton, from veteran perspective, have really developed. We talk about this year being somewhat of a rebuilding / development year. And I think Sexton, Collins have taken that to heart. And while some guys maybe got caught up in the fact they're not very good, they get discouraged, you know, they drop their head, they pout. You know, these two guys, in my mind, just kept their head down and, you know, had an idea that they wanted to get better. And I think they both vastly improved this year just by virtue of doing that.
All right, I want to ask you a question that DJ and PK were debating earlier this morning, Tim, and they were talking about Lauri Markkanen. It looks like his season is over. Ben was one of the people that was reporting this, that looks like he's just going to be put on the shelf for the rest of the year. And essentially the high water mark of his career is in the mid-60s in terms of games played out of 82 in a regular season so far in his NBA career. And they were questioning, is he worth a long-term lucrative extension if you can only rely on him between 55 and maybe 70 games a season? Your thought?
Oh man, I don't know. I think that's why I got out of this. I will tell you what I see with Lauri Markkanen. I see a guy who's really committed to his team. I think he's committed to winning. He's up until the trade deadline, when everything kind of, you know, when spacing became an issue. Mm-hmm. When you move guys that are known for, particularly Kelly Olynyk, being kind of a facilitator, that the team definitely lost a little bit of that at the trade deadline. But I think what I've seen in 2 years, this guy's willing, he's tough. he's very skilled. I think he's improved on certain things that he needed to improve on over the last couple of years. Like Ben said, he's worked more in ISO. I think he's done a better job when the officials will blow the whistle at creating contact and getting fouls. But at the end of the day, in terms of like how he fits, where his piece is going to be, I see him as more of a number two guy to a more, I don't know, a player that can do more in a lot of different areas. And I think with the Jazz, both their ability to move in free agency, their ability to move up in the draft or just draft all the picks they have, you know, they're going to find players to accentuate what Lowry does. But in a vacuum right now, I mean, I think that that's the most honest answer I can give. I think he's a guy that's helping the organization, but I think it always comes down to what's it going to cost, and how is it going to impact us doing what we want to do. I don't flippantly throw around other people's money just because, I mean, this is really the nuance of the NBA, how you put your team together when you do it, the pieces that you put together going forward, that's your chance to win it. So I think that's where we are right now. And, as far as Lowry being a piece of this going forward, I think it would be awesome, you know, for him and for the organization. But without seeing all the other pieces, the best answer I can give you is I think he's a very, very solid, you know, if not, I don't want to say two, like 1B, you know, because he's got some definite one skill.
The cliche about the NCAA tournament is it's a guards tournament, but I look at Grant Nelson at Alabama, and then, of course, DJ Burns at NC State, and then the two big players, Donovan Klingon at UConn and Zach Edey at Purdue. I'm loving this. I love old-school big guys. Nelson's not so much old-school, but I love these big guys who get into the post and aren't afraid to bang and protect the rim on one end and then just try and get easy baskets at the other side. I've really liked watching these big guys play, and I'm excited to see them face off in the Final Four.
I am too. I totally am. I have one of the four. It's how crazy this thing was. But you, with all that being said, I think it sets up so great. I think the storylines, there's so many storylines. Nate Oates, the head coach at Alabama, I met him in 2018 back at Celtics training camp, and he was just kind of sitting off by himself. And, you know, I'm kind of a mixer blender. I walked up and we started chatting. So for the 2 or 3 days we were there, got to know each other pretty well and have stayed in touch. And his story is so cool because 10 years ago, he was a high school coach, 10 or 11 years ago. Danny Hurley, obviously, was a high school coach. But Nate Oates got into the game because the Hurley brothers gave him an opportunity at Buffalo. He went to work there for Bobby at Buffalo. Bobby obviously went to ASU. Nate got the Buffalo job, and the rest is history. But it's just pretty crazy, all the different storylines. But yeah, the big guys, man, they are kind of the story. And it's what's kind of neat is it's not necessarily 5 yards in a cloud of dust like the old days. There's a lot of movement. You know, you watch Connecticut's offense, and you watch Klingon, setting flares, turning around and setting a rescreen, rolling hard to the basket. And both he and Edey kind of are like road graders for those guards. They roll, particularly from the high ball screen, the middle of the third of the floor, and they literally just wipe out the defense and the guards. You'll see it and drive it to their left hand, see they've got an opening because he's ceiling to the right. So there's a lot at play here, but I do love basketball, regardless of big or small, guys you can play through. It's why I brought up that angle of Sensabaugh. I think it makes guys more valuable. This is going to be fun. Obviously, Alabama, UConn, really high octane. If it comes down to Edey versus Klingon, I mean, how fun would that be?
Right.
So lots of different ways you could go. But I really enjoyed, even with all the upsets and my bracket being destroyed, I really enjoyed the tournament this year.
Well, I also wanted to ask you about NC State here. This is a team BYU beat 4 months ago now down there in Las Vegas. And how crazy to see them have won 9 straight now and punched their ticket back to the Final Four for the first time since Thurl Bailey was playing for them.
Yeah, I hope Thurl can make it down there. We were talking to him last week, and he told me, he was like, I got to get down there. So
he
can make it. What's the most amazing to me, and it just shows you how fragile a coaching – how fragile a career in coaching can be. NC State was down three to Virginia in the ACC tournament. Guy was at the line to seal it for Virginia. And makes the free throw, it's over.
Mm-hmm.
He misses, and NC State comes down and hits that bank shot from the left wing to send it to overtime. And from that point on, they go to what they've done right now. You know, Kevin Keats could always coach, but, you know, you have to kind of get lightning in a bottle, and they found it. They found the resilience. I think you gained strength. They had five times they had to overcome, you know, if they lose, they're done in that week, and I think they galvanized. Well, they got a special player in DJ Burns, and that dude is – he just gets that thing on the block. He reads his defender perfectly, and his touch is immaculate. So I can't wait. I mean, like, that matchup between they and Purdue will just be it will be interesting because, obviously, Purdue's just kind of beaten everybody with size. But these guys have some substance and some, like I said, some resolve. So that's going to be a hell of a first game.
And Purdue, great game yesterday and close and looks vulnerable. I haven't seen a single second where I thought UConn looked vulnerable at any point this tournament. I mean, they look so much better and so much more dominant than every other team I've seen in recent tournaments in a really long time. Is that what you see happening next weekend? I don't know if there's going to be a single-digit game for UConn throughout this whole tournament.
Well, again, I think if you were to look at my bracket, I don't know if you want me to answer that question. I come on as an expert, but in terms of brackets or who's going to win, that's always been a little bit difficult. This is the way I see it. I see it like everybody else has, like the 1.0 software, and UConn was the first school in the country to get 2.0. I mean, I just think they move at a different speed. I think they run better stuff. I mean, like Luke Murray, son of Bill Murray, is their offensive coordinator. And I'm telling you, like, dig into some of the stuff they run. They run a horn set where they literally flare for one of the bigs and throw a skip pass to him and then play off of a handoff. The guard's coming off the horn screen to the, you know, the weak side and just playing off a handoff over there. I mean, stuff that it's really kind of mind-bending, the cuts, the imagination, and then just what they can do to you. They can wad you up defensively and then get out in the open court. So, yeah, where I sit, I think it's going to be a UConn route. But, again, I preface that with my bracket.
Coach, thanks for jumping on. As always, 7 games left. Excited to catch up with you before the end of the season.
Man, Jake Scott sounds different today.
A little bit.
Took the day off yesterday.
You had a cold or something?
Yeah, had a cold. Couldn't work last night. That's why JP was filling in. But he's back, pushing through it.
Well, it's great to talk to you both.
All right, see you, Coach. There he is, Coach Tim Lacombe joins us every Monday. Our conversation brought to you by Spherion of Utah. You have better things to do than scramble to find your next great hire. Let Spherion Staffing do it. Visit them online, spherion.com/Utah. That's spherion.com/Utah. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens this weekend. I'm not anticipating much chance. No, look, everyone's been underestimating NC State this whole time.
I was going to say, here's the thing. Thurl, if he can make it happen, he needs to get down there.
Oh, no, he's got to go. Like, he's a legend at NC State. This is when the players show up. I mean, mm-hmm. We remember famously the Marcus Page shot that ended up getting erased by the buzzer beater by Villanova.
Yes, I believe you're right, yeah.
But Marcus Page hits that crazy. And the who's the face they cut to in the crowd? Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. Yep. Even MJ is going down to support his alma mater when MJ won't leave his house for anything other than a great round of golf.
I was going to say, so, unless he's out on the links, yeah, you're right.
So, yeah, Thurl's got to go down there. Thurl's got to be a part of that.
And the nice part is this is in Arizona, so it's actually a really relatively easy trip. It's not having to go across the country and the like. So, yeah, it'd be cool to see Thurl show up. Did you read that whole thing about Ryan he's the ESPN writer, college football, and also NASCAR.
Yeah. He did with Marty and Marty Smith and Ryan, whatever their show was. But
but he wore 41 his entire life because of Thurl Bailey. And they met when the Jazz played in.
Yeah, Marty Smith.
Marty Smith is the other one. It's Ryan McGee.
Yeah, Ryan McGee
grew up in North Carolina, watched the NC State team. He wore the number 41 because of Thurl Bailey, and it took until this year for them to meet.
Yeah, a game in Charlotte, right?
Yeah. So Holly Rowe, obviously with her connections in ESPN, helped hook them up. But that kind of shows you what Thurl Bailey means to the NC State community. Like, Thurl, you probably don't take my opinion for much of anything, nor should you, but this is something, yeah, he absolutely needs to get down to.
And you know what? Well, Tim Lacombe will fill in on TV. Yeah. If he's got to. You know,
yeah.
there's
options. They'll slide Mike Smith. Yeah, they'll figure it out.
Right. So, yeah, Thurl, you got to be there. Got to be there for your team, and that's one of the best parts about these college basketball runs. And you know what? If Utah did it, I'd expect Andre Miller and KVH to be there.
And a whole litany of the Johnson brothers.
Right.
Alex Jensen probably finds a way to get there. Yeah.
BYU makes it. Danny Ainge's got to be there.
Jimmer
will be there. Yeah, right. You've got to get the faces there. Mm-hmm. So excited to see. We'll see if Big Dog Glenn Robinson turns out for Purdue this week.
Okay, that would be actually really cool.
We'll see who ends up showing up for these teams. But yeah, very cool. And, you know, half the NBA is Villanova players. I guess, UConn. We got some UConn players in the league, too, so we'll see who shows up.
That's the New York Knicks about.
Yeah. We'll see who shows up this weekend for all these teams.
Yeah.
Villanova's not playing anymore. All right, we'll keep breaking down the Utah Jazz and the latest in the world of sports locally. Coming up next, stick around, Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
What's that? Whether it's the Jazz, Utes, Cougars, or Aggies, these guys have got you covered.
Time to eat, fellas.
You're locked on to Jake Scott and Ben Anderson.
1, 2, 3, move it.
On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Jake Hatch filling in for Jake Scott. Other Jake will be back tomorrow. But shout out to Hatch for filling in, as always. Hey, coming up on Friday, join Hans and Scotty from noon to 3 at Rogers Performance Marine to celebrate the grand opening of their Splash Into Spring event. 1009 Recreation Way in North Salt Lake. 1009, however you want to say it. Recreation Way in North Salt Lake. Hans and Scotty, noon to 3 at Rogers Performance Marine to celebrate the grand opening of their Splash Into Spring event. All right, well, the Jazz get pretty impressive performances last night. I thought, here's the thing. I don't really care all that much about the downturn from Keontae George over the last couple of weeks. Like, I think it's pretty clear what happened. He really hit a stride going into the All-Star break. He had that big 30-point game.
Sure, yeah.
Came back. Jazz make all these trades. He kind of gets the starting role, and not just the starting role, but the starring role after Lauri Markkanen is out with injury. Mm-hmm. He takes off. He's the number one option for the Jazz, played really well, had that incredible stretch where he was shooting very well, and then I think absolutely runs out of gas. Lauri Markkanen comes out of the lineup. His rhythm is totally thrown off, and he's falling apart. And honestly, I just don't think he has legs. I think the rookie wall has not just hit him, but pretty much disintegrated him.
Yeah.
He's got very little to offer physically, and that's on him. Like, you've got to get bigger, you've got to get stronger, you've got to figure out all these ways to play more. But he didn't have the advantage of playing in the G League. You know, he came in and was in the rotation right away and started playing big minutes like 10 games into the season. So I think the rookie wall has been the reason for his downturn over the last 15 games of the season and, you know, what will probably close out the rest of the year. I wouldn't worry about it. He'll get in better shape and be fine next year. Impressive that, you know, you see Bryce Sensabaugh go 0-for-8 on Friday night. He was dreadful. At least shooting.
I was sitting there watching it with my own eyes. I'm like, woo, yeah, but.
And then last night bounced back and was arguably the best player on the floor for the Jazz.
I think that goes to what you're talking about the rookies. There's just an inconsistency factor for it. And you're right. Keontae, that wall, yeah, disintegrated is probably the right term to use because you can tell that he's like, how many more games I got on this? Like, they play 40 games at the very most in the college game. And
right.
You play double that in the regular season. And it happens to every rookie. Sensabaugh and Hendricks don't look as gassed because guess what? They spent the first half of the season doing what they did with the Salt Lake City Stars. And the G League, it is what it is, but you're not playing the same level and same amount of games as you do in the NBA.
Much less pressure, all the things that add up.
So, yes, it's nice to see Bryce Sensabaugh be a bounce back because it was a dreadful performance Friday. I was sitting there with my daughter watching it with my own eyes, and I'm like, wow, this is bad. But then he has a really fine performance last night. And kind of goes to the question I had also about Taylor Hendricks I asked Tim about. I've watched Taylor Hendricks shoot a lot of corner threes this year. There are times it comes off his hand, you're like, that's going down. The other times you see that is going 10 yards left or right because it's just flat. All three of them have shown flashes of great ability to impact basketball games, not just scoring-wise. We're talking Hendricks looks like the future 3-and-D wing you want him to be. And you just got to be able to draw that out of them. And obviously this upcoming offseason, as you mentioned, getting into shape, working on those skill sets, critical for all three of them here.
Yeah, Bryce's is going to be about conditioning. Not that I think he's in bad shape. I know he's got a big body.
Yeah.
He's not, like, out of shape. It's just about conditioning yourself to play 82 games. He's also got to get into the – remember Royce O'Neal couldn't dribble when he first got here?
Oh, yeah.
He's like, he's got to get into the Royce O'Neal dribbling academy of learning how to handle the ball. Because I actually think he's a much better passer, we've said, than Royce.
Yeah.
So if you allow him to do a couple of things, like, he doesn't need to do a lot off the dribble. Yeah. He needs one or two moves to get to his spots to get a shot up or make a pass. And I think they will get him there. Well, and then, Taylor Hendricks' technique defensively, et cetera, et cetera. But the nice thing is all these guys have a skill. And truthfully, for both Bryce and Taylor right now, maybe their best skill is that they are legitimately going to be dangerous shooters. I think you saw it last night. Bryce Sensabaugh, 5 of 10 from the three-point line. Just the ability to get 10 threes up is impressive. Knock down 5 is good. And then Taylor Hendricks at his size with his defensive versatility going 4 of 6 is encouraging if you're a Jazz fan.
Well, and the thing about it is I want to say it was you about a month ago on Twitter said that the Jazz rookie draft picks look pretty genius in retrospect. Mm-hmm. And I got to give you credit because you were kind of the first person I felt like had pointed out. I noticed and I was watching. I'm like, he's not wrong. Here's the thing. Because remember, when Taylor Hendricks wasn't in the lineup, as a rookie, early on, he is now, but early on, that was a waste of a pick.
Yeah.
It's the ninth pick. You know what? They had a plan for him, and it looks like it's paid off. Bryce Sensabaugh was kind of the extra guy in most people's minds. You had a pick, you had to take somebody, and like, Sensabaugh's good enough, bring him in. But what have they done? They've all proven that they are, appears that they are viable NBA rotation pieces, which is a positive for this rebuilding effort that the Jazz are going to undergo. Are all three of them going to be on this roster in 4 or 5 years' time?
Of course not.
Probably not. Maybe one of them.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. That's the nature of the NBA. You're looking at this from a 30,000-foot view. If you're the front office, you're saying, okay, what pieces do we have right now, and who potentially down the line are we going to need to be able to move out if need be to make room for X, Y, or Z? So It's good to see them doing their thing. It does make me chuckle that Bryce Sensabaugh is very much an Royce O'Neal type. Like, he's got to learn to be able to do what he needs to do on the basketball court to function. But his ability, he can step back and shoot with anybody.
Yep, he can.
And that, you can say, okay, as Will Hardy will say, like, okay, I can work with that. I can build sets to take advantage of that skill for you. And that is going to be something that Will Hardy also will have to work on in the offseason, is saying, okay, I've got these three pieces. This is what they do well. This is what we're having them work on. Where can we utilize them best on the court and in what spots to maximize their potential?
Yeah, again, the other thing about Bryce, he was 5 of 10 from 3. That also means he was 3 of 4 inside the arc, which is something I actually think he has a very good skill to do, which is create a shot for himself.
That'd be good.
Inside the arc, which you have to have guys who do that. Lowry can do it a little bit, but isn't great at it, is kind of one of his flaws.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things you learned this year, I think, is some of the things that Lowry is not becoming, which at his age, he'll get better. I don't think he's going to continue to add a ton of things to his game. So finding some of those guys who can create their own shots is going to be important for the Jazz, and Bryce Sensabaugh looks like he has a chance to be one of those players.
Well, and you have to have the mix of guys, as you mentioned, late in the shot clock, you'd have a guy or two on the court at all times who, you toss them the ball. It's the Jordan Clarkson. They can go and they'll manufacture something for you. But you also have guys like Lauri Markkanen who, they're not necessarily going to create their own shot, but they're very good catch-and-shoot guys. You get them into their spots. You get them the ball in time. They're going to knock down shots. You have to have that blended together.
Yeah.
Because if you have that, that means you have the versatility that you crave. You have the guys you know are going to be able to get the buckets running the set you need. But when it breaks down, you go get the ball to the bucket getter and say, okay, Jordan, Bryce in this case, Bryce Sensabaugh, go find a way to get a shot up.
Yeah, have a couple of guys who can create their own. It's important. It's a critical part of what the Jazz do. And then one of the things you mentioned you mentioned their draft picks and their war chests.
Yeah.
You use a draft pick and the value of them go down, right?
Yeah.
If the player doesn't hit.
Sure.
So the nice thing is, like, you can always trade future draft picks because there's always the what if attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
But the nice thing is if you do hit on these draft picks, and again, I think it's safe to say that the Jazz rookies this year have more positives than they do negatives. None of them are perfect players. They all have negatives. They all have some red flags.
Sure.
But I don't think any of them have quote-unquote fatal flaws. They're going to keep them from being in the NBA.
They're not unplayable,
The nice thing is every team wants young talent, and every GM can justify whatever trade as long as they get a young piece back that might turn into something.
Sure.
So when you hit on young players, as unromantic as this is, because as a fan you really want to fall in love with the guys on your team, the fact that these guys become tradable and aren't lost assets because they were busts as draft picks is as important as anything they actually do on the floor. You know, the fact that they could be tradable and still have value down the line is really significant. And that was a plus for this Jazz season.
Hey, it adds to what you have to offer when teams come calling or you're calling them saying, okay, hey, we're interested in player X. What's it going to take? And they're like, well, you have that Sensabaugh kid or you have Keontae George. Like, what would it take for them to be part of this deal? And then you start – that's where you start. And it's – I love the machinations of NBA and just overall pro sports front office. This is because there are so many phone calls that happen that go literally nowhere.
Right.
It's one phone call. Hey, we're interested in this guy. What's it going to take? They're like – that's why you're like, thanks for the time. Have a great day. On to the next.
Yeah.
But then there are other times you call them up, say, hey, we're interested in this. They're like, well, we're interested in from you guys. And then you start talking and it starts morphing and changing. And you're like, okay, what do we got to include here? The whole situation about going into one trade, I don't think people really realize how many hours, man hours, go into just one single trade being executed at the pro sports level. It takes a ton for this to come together. And when it does, yeah, everybody's looking out for their best interests. And you're right. GMs, they love nothing more than be able to turn to their CEO, their owner, and say, hey, I got this piece over here who we think can become this.
Yep. You know, an interesting situation. And you know, trades die and come back to life. And trades, I mean, notoriously, the Jazz trade with the Cavaliers ended up being Donovan Mitchell died. Yeah. Like, the Cavaliers said, we're not interested. We're not going to be a part of this anymore. Yeah. Then it was like, okay, it's all Knicks with the Jazz. And then the R.J. Barrett signed his contract extension, and the Jazz didn't want him anymore. Yeah. And so they called the Cavaliers back up and said, hey, how are you still feeling about, you know, Colin, Lowry, and Ochai?
Kobe Altman got on the line once again with Justin Zanuck, and they're like, all right, here we go.
Here's the deal. So, and, you know, an example of what you were talking about, the ability to kind of mix and match pieces, was the Jazz wanted Jaden McDaniels from the Minnesota Timberwolves, reportedly. Yeah. And the Timberwolves said, well, how about we throw in Walker Kessler instead or a draft pick instead? And the Jazz said, fine. But that's the advantage of having good young players and draft picks is, hey, let's say the Jazz get to a trade where they want to bring in a superstar, whoever it is. And the team says, hey, man, we really want Bryce Sensabaugh.
Sure.
And the Jazz can say, well, what about a future first-round pick instead? Because we actually kind of like Bryce and we're going to keep him around. Or vice versa.
Sure.
Hey, we don't want to include this future unprotected Lakers pick, but look at how good this rookie is performing right now. This is better than a first-round pick because you don't have to wait 8 years for it to hit.
It's a proven
option.
It's
ready to go.
Yeah.
So it just gives you that type of versatility, and that's where the Jazz are trying to build to improve.
And that's the thing about it is it's not going to come together in one offseason, Ben. Like you said this earlier. You expect some moves, moves this offseason. They're not going to be the end-all, be-all moves. Because nor should they be, nor can they be also. Because with how many assets the Jazz have, you'd have to be executing trades at an astronomical clip.
Yeah, how many yachts can you buy in one summer? Like, billionaires have all the money in the world. It's hard to spend it.
Yes. So it's going to take some time, but I think they're trying to execute it the best way that they know how. And yeah, it may not fully come together for years down the line, but I'm going to preach to Jazz fans here for a minute. Just trust what they're trying to execute here. Like, understand that, yeah, it's not a perfect process. And trust me, for us in sports media, watching what the Jazz are putting on the court right now, it's tough. Because there's very real possibility they're 0-16 to finish out this year.
And I would also add that, you know, there's the idea of going all in, which is what the Jazz did when they traded for Mike Conley. And they had zero future assets. They had nothing else they could do. They couldn't trade any more draft
picks.
And
Danny Ainge sat him down in that draft and said, this is fun, isn't it? Yeah.
I don't think we're ever going to see that again. I don't think the Jazz will ever, quote, be fully all in. Like, even look at the Boston Celtics under Danny Ainge. Mm-hmm. What was so exciting about Boston's run was they always still had more stuff.
They maintained flexibility.
Yeah, they still had all this flexibility. Mm-hmm. They still had moves to make and ways that they could improve. They were never cornered.
They're not the LeBron Lakers. The Lakers have been maxed out.
The Timberwolves.
Timberwolves, same thing.
The Cavaliers now, they're maxed out. They can't do anything. The Suns are the most maxed out all-in team I've ever seen.
Yeah.
They are so fully all-in, they don't control their own draft picks. All their draft picks are swapped that they do own. So it's a mess. I don't think you're ever going to be that way. I think the Jazz are going to operate like a billionaire that just says, well, I'm always looking for the next investment also. Like, I'm always trying to build up the wealth, and I'm never going to deplete it for one move.
Yeah.
I think the Jazz are always going to try and have multiple future picks, expiring contracts, and young pieces that are kind of always working, and you hope that there are some spikes where you get a chance to win a title in the right season and be competitive for a long time. But, like, they should be able to, with this war chest of draft picks and young players they have, kind of keep this thing going for a long time, just because you can always kick the can down the road. You can always swap an asset for a future asset.
Yeah.
And I suspect that's the long-term goal for the Jazz.
And guess what? With those other teams that you mentioned that are all in, eventually it comes a point where they're going to have to start shedding their assets,
yeah.
And that's when you strike.
Yep, exactly right. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show. Stick around. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
The sports you love, the teams you can't live without.
You have sense of urgency!
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Show brought to you by Peach Doors and Windows, Utah's premier window and door retailer, combining beauty and technology on windows and doors since 1993. Call them today for your free and a home estimate, 801-566-1255. Hatch, would be remiss to not discuss huge college basketball games tonight on the women's side of the bracket. LSU at Iowa.
The rematch.
This is going to be one of the most hotly anticipated women's basketball games in my lifetime.
It might be the most watched ever. Like, here's the thing, Caitlin Clark, if you have not watched Caitlin Clark play basketball, you are missing out on one of the more electrifying players you're ever going to see. And then, on the other side, you have this head coach by the name of Kim Mulkey, who is just a cantankerous you-know-what.
Yep.
But she also has some really good players led by Angel Reese, and they obviously are rematching what was the national title game last year. It's going to be a fun one tonight, it looks like, because I think these two teams they got a little something for each other after what happened last year.
There's a ton of attitude on both of these teams. I mean, first of all, LSU's has walked the walk,
mm-hmm.
so they get to talk the talk.
Yeah.
And we will see if Caitlin Clark can back up. I mean, she doesn't need to prove she's brilliant. She's already going to be the number one pick in the WNBA draft. She's one of the greatest women's college basketball players we've ever seen, and just one of the greatest college basketball players we've ever seen, hence owning the scoring title. She is unreal and mm-hmm. excited to watch this game tonight. That's going to be a fun one. And not the only game on the docket, even though it's going to pale in comparison. UConn versus USC is a huge game.
Well, okay, and here's the thing. Juju, they've been a running joke with DJ and PK. Is she the best Juju to come out of USC in their history with Juju Smith-Schuster? But Juju Watkins, an impact freshman, and then obviously what Gino Auriemma has built at UConn over the years. Is it Beckers? Is that her last name correct, I think? She's a really good player. Back off of an ACL tear. You've got headliners on all four of these teams, and it should yield for some really compelling basketball tonight. Look, listen, I know that women's basketball is not for everybody, but I'm telling you, this year the NCAA women's basketball tournament has been awesome.
Look, what all sports need, but basketball specifically, and the NBA needed this. It's why Larry and Magic were credited with saving the NBA. It needs stars.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to have stars. It doesn't work without stars. There was a huge panic in the NBA after Michael Jordan left of, like, what is going to happen?
Yeah.
And it just so happened that Kobe and Shaq and Tim Duncan were there and ready to take over. And we've realized, like, the NBA is doing it now. Who's going to be the next great American player when LeBron retires? You know what? Somebody will.
Yeah.
Somebody will. The problem for women's basketball is that while there have been stars, not every team has a star. And now you're going to get to the point in the WNBA where you're going to have all these familiar faces where women's college basketball has done such a good job marketing their stars like Angel Reese
mm-hmm.
that are going to go into the draft now, and then you're going to follow them. And we are seeing it with Breanna Stewart.
Oh,
we've seen a lot of talent, Ionescu.
Sabrina Ionescu, yeah, absolutely.
Seeing them come through the college ranks, become stars as young players, get drafted, and then you follow them in the WNBA is how those leagues build up. And these are the types of moments where you see the Magic versus Bird at the Huntsman Center, like in the tournament, these iconic games. So a chance tonight for this LSU-Iowa game. It should be very exciting.
It should be appointment television. We'll see how it ultimately transpires. But the thing is, I can think back to the yesteryear of WNBA. Sue Bird, I know David Locke is very, very close to her. But I remember Sue Bird was just so good in college. I've tracked, she played, what, 20-ish yeah. years in the WNBA? She was in her 40s before she ultimately called it quits not that long ago. There are a lot of athletes like that over the years. And that's the fun part about it is you can kind of latch on to them, as you mentioned, early on, before they were quote unquote big time.
Yeah.
And that's the fun part.
And it seems like we're getting more and more. It yes. seems like we're getting more super iconic female players coming through that are household names. The way Caitlin Clark is absolutely a household name.
Oh, yeah.
So,
by the way, I think the Indiana Fever have the first pick in the WNBA yep. draft, and they've all but said that, yeah, Caitlin Clark, come on down.
Yeah.
Like, so, no, yep. as they should.
And they're finding ways to compensate her to make sure that she's making millions, yes. not just the $250,000 she'll be eligible for. She's going to mm-hmm. be very well compensated and be a star in the WNBA.
Did you see the discrepancies with the Portland court, though?
I did. 3-point Insane. Line?
Oh, yeah.
Inexcusable. If you didn't see it, the key was off.
Uh-huh.
But
it was off for more than just that game.
Right.
It was off the entire tournament.
You had one job. Paint the lines on the basketball court right. Yeah, the 3-point line was misshapen and was closer to the key at some points. It was a joke.
Well, and here's the deal. That they have the two regionals in the women's basketball. So there's one in Portland. There's one in Albany, New York. So they have 8 teams each in both mm-hmm. of these. They played, as you mentioned, multiple games before this got caught. It's like, okay, this is standard practice, folks. Yeah. Like, let's go.
Well, those people never get to design a court again.
Yeah.
All right, Hans and Scotty coming up next. Hatch, thanks as always for filling in for
thanks
Jake.
Thanks for having me.
Jake Scott will be back tomorrow. Stick around. More Hans and Scotty coming up next, 97.5, the KSL Sports
Zone. Thanks, Sarah.